good morning, and welcome to another episode of Kings and Queens, the podcast where we read, watch, play, and discuss history's favorite scream queens and literary kings of horror. I am your host, Nat, and this week we are diving into chapter 29 of Stephen King's Holly. The last 2 weeks, we've gotten a lot of insight into Little Miss Barbara Robinson and her writing career. This week, we are headed back to our heroine, Holly, and her investigation of the missing girl, Bonnie Rae Dahl. If you have not already, I highly recommend going back to the beginning and reading all the previous chapters with us. As a reminder, when you hear this sound, that means I have stopped reading from the text and am instead discussing thoughts, interpretation, things like that. When the sound replays, that means the mic is back to the author. Without further ado, let's begin chapter 29 of Holly. Chapter 29, July 1st, 2021. Page 275. 8:03. Bonnie Rae Dahl bikes down Red Bank Avenue and turns in at the Jet Mart. 8:04. She dismounts, takes off her helmet, and shakes out her hair. She puts the helmet on the seat and goes in. "Hey, Emilio," she says, and gives him a smile. "Hey," he responds, and gives it right back. She goes past the beer cave to the back cooler, where the soft drinks are waiting. She grabs a Diet Pepsi. She starts back down the aisle, then pauses at the rack of snack cakes. Twinkies, Ho-Hos, Yodels, Little Debbies. She picks up a package of Ho-Hos, considering. Emilio is putting cigarettes into the rack behind the counter. Outside, a van passes the store, heading downhill. 8:05. Roddy Harris is driving the van. He's got the hypo of Valium in the pocket of the sport coat he's wearing. I don't know if y'all remember, but I called this way back in the beginning chapters when they discussed the heat on the back of the skull with the injection of this medication that these poor victims thought was like a mosquito bite or a wasp sting or something. I specifically said it was an opiate, or I suspected it was an opiate because of the symptoms that they had. This just confirms that I was close, but no cigar. Not an opiate by any means. Valium or diazepam, commonly used in seizure patients, sometimes used for anxiety sleeping issues. However, it is in fact a benzodiazepine, which can cause a lot of what they were seeing. I knew it was something heavy. Emily is already in the wheelchair, ready to go. And tonight she needs it. Her sciatica has returned with a vengeance. Roddy pulls onto the cracked tarmac of what used to be Bill's Automotive and Small Engine Repair, with the van's sliding door facing the abandoned shop. "One Christmas elf coming right up," he says. "Just hurry," Emily snaps. "I don't want to miss her. This is agony." How quick Emily Harris is to complain about her own pain. I am certain that Bonnie Dahl's kidnapping, forced eating of liver, and eventual murder will also be agony, Emily. She turns the wheelchair to face the door. Roddy presses a button and the door rolls back. The ramp slides out. Emily rides it down to the pavement. Roddy puts on the four-way flashers and gets out. They have debated the flashers at great length and finally decided they have to take the risk. They can't afford to miss her. Em is bad and Roddy isn't in great shape himself. His hips hurt and his hands are stiff, but the real problem is his mind. It keeps drifting. It's not Alzheimer's, he refuses to believe that, but he's definitely gotten muzzy. A fresh infusion of brains will put him right, and the rest will put Em right. Especially the Christmas elf's liver. That's the holy grail, the sacrament. But no part of the animal must be wasted. It isn't just his motto, it's his mantra. I think we've known all along that Roddy is treating these humans as animals, as some kind of lesser cognitive species. He just openly admitted, no part of the animal must be wasted. He doesn't see people as people anymore. He breaks them down into macro and micronutrients. My God. 8:06. Bonnie has put the package of Ho-Hos back, not without regret. She comes to the counter, billfold in hand. She carries it in her hip pocket like a man. "Why don't you think again about those Ho-Hos?" Emilio says as he rings her up. "You're in good shape. They won't hurt you." "Get thee behind me, Satan. My body is a temple." "If you say so," Emilio replies. At Jet Mart, this one anyway, the customer is always right. They both laugh. Bonnie pockets her change, slides her backpack off one shoulder, and puts her bottle of soda inside. She plans to sip it while watching Ozark on Netflix. She zips the pack closed and shoulders it. "Have a good night, Emilio." He gives her a thumbs up. 8:07. Bonnie puts on her helmet, mounts her bike, and pauses just long enough to adjust one of her pack straps. Not far down the hill, across from the part of the park known as the Thickets, Emily is piloting her wheelchair around the rear of the van. The pavement is cracked and uneven. Each time the wheelchair dips and sways, there's an explosion of pain in her lower back. She presses her lips together to keep from crying out, but she can't help moaning. Flag her down! It's part whisper, part growl. Don't fail, Roddy. Please don't fail. Roddy has no intention of failing. If Bonnie won't stop for him, he'll kick her off her bike as she tries to pass by. Assuming, of course, that his hips are up to the task. What he would give to be 50 again, even 60. He turns to M and sees something he doesn't like. The wheelchair's guide light is still on, shining down on the pavement. Hard to believe a wheelchair has a dead battery if the light is still working. And the girl is coming, speeding down the hill. Turn off the light, he whispers. Emily, turn off the goddamn guide light. She does, just in time, because here's the girl, their Christmas elf. Roddy steps off the sidewalk, waving his arms. Can you help us, please? We need help. Bonnie speeds past, and she's too far into the street for him to even think about karate kicking her off the bike. He has an instant to see all their planning going to waste, diminishing as the bike's flashing red taillight diminishes downhill. But then the girl brakes, swerves, and comes back. He doesn't know if it was him waving his arms, the four-way flashers, the desire to be a good Samaritan, or all three. He's just relieved. She pedals slowly, a little wary at first, but there's more than enough light left in the day for her to see who was waving her down. Professor Harris? What's up? What's wrong? It's M. Her sciatica is very bad, and the battery in her wheelchair died. Is it possible you could help me get her inside? The ramp is on the other side. I just want to take her home. Bonnie? Emily asks weakly. Bonnie Doll, is that you? It is. Oh my god, Emily, I'm so sorry. Bonnie dismounts her bike and pushes down the kickstand. She hurries to Emily and bends over her. What happened? Why did you stop here? A car passes. It slows. Roddy's heart stops. Then it speeds up again. Emily has no good answer for Bonnie's question, so she just moans. We need to get her around to the other side, Roddy repeats. Can you help me push? He bends as if to take one of the wheelchair's rear handles, but Bonnie hips him aside and grabs both. She turns the wheelchair and pushes it around the back of the van. Emily whimpers at each bounce and jounce. Roddy skirts the ramp, leans in the open driver's side door, and kills the four-way flashers. That's one less thing to worry about, he thinks. Should I call someone? Bonnie asks. My phone. Just get me up the ramp, Emily gasps. I'll be fine once I get home and take a muscle relaxant. Bonnie positions the wheelchair facing the ramp and takes a deep breath. She'd like to pull it back first and get a running start, but the pavement is too uneven. One hard push, she thinks. I'm strong enough. I can do this. Should I help? Roddy asks, but he's already moving behind Bonnie rather than towards the wheelchair's handles. His hand dips into his pocket. He flips the small protective cap off the tip of the hypo with no trouble. He's done this before, both in numerous practice runs and 4 times when it's the real thing. The van blocks what's happening here from the street, and he has no reason to think everything won't go well. They are almost home free. No, I can do it. Stay back. Bonnie bends like a runner in the starting blocks, gets a good grasp on the rubber hand grips, and pushes. Halfway up the ramp, just as she thinks she won't be able to finish the job, the wheelchair's motor hums to life. The guide light comes on. At the same moment, she feels a wasp sting the back of her neck. Emily rolls into the van. Roddy expects Bonnie to collapse, just as the others did. He has every reason to expect that. He's just injected 15 milligrams of Valium less than 2 inches from the elf girl's cerebellum. Instead, she straightens up and turns around. Her hand goes to the back of her neck. For a moment, Roddy thinks he's given her a diluted dose, maybe even no dose at all, only water. It's her eyes that convince him that isn't true. A younger and much brawnier Roddy Harris, then an undergraduate, worked 2 summers in a Texas slaughterhouse. It was where he began to formulate his theories about the near-magical properties of flesh. Sometimes the bolt gun they used to put the cows down wouldn't be fully charged or would be aimed slightly off target. When that happened, the cows looked like Bonnie Doll does now, eyes floating in their sockets, faces slack with bewilderment. What did you do? What? Why won't she go down? Emily asks shrilly from the open van door. Be quiet, he says. She will. But instead of going down, Bonnie blunders toward the back of the van, arms held out for balance. And toward the street beyond, presumably. Roddy tries to grab her. She pushes him away with surprising strength. She stumbles backward, trips over a protruding lip of pavement, and lands on his ass. His hips howl. His teeth click together, catching a scrap of his tongue between them. Blood trickles into his mouth. In this fraught moment, he enjoys the taste, even though he knows his own blood is useless to him. Any blood without flesh is useless to him. She's getting away, Emily cries. Roddy loves his wife, but in that moment, he hates her too. If there were people on the other side of Red Bank Avenue instead of tangled undergrowth, they would be coming out to see what all the ruckus was about. He scrambles to his feet. Bonnie has veered away from the van and Red Bank Avenue. Now she's blundering across the front of the abandoned repair shop, one hand sliding along the rusty roll-up door to keep from going down, taking a drunk's big, loose, swaying strides. She makes it all the way to the end of the building before he can throw a forearm around her neck and yank her back. She still tries to fight him, twisting her head from side to side. Her bike helmet thuds against his shoulder. One of her earrings flies off. Roddy is too busy to notice. His hands are, as they say, full. Her vitality is nothing short of remarkable. Even now, Roddy thinks he can't wait to taste her. He drags her back towards the van, gasping for breath, heart beating not just in his chest, but thrumming in his neck and pulsing in his head. Come on, he says, and gets her turned around. Come on, Elf, come on, come on. One flailing elbow connects with his cheekbone. Sparks flash in front of his eyes. He loses his hold on her, but then, thank God, her knees buckle and she finally drops. He turns to Emily. Can you help me? She gets partway up, winces, and flops back down. No, if my back locks up all the way, I'll only make matters worse. You'll have to do it yourself. I'm sorry. Not as sorry as I am, Roddy thinks. But the alternative is jail, headlines, a trial, cable news 24/7, and finally prison. He seizes Bonnie under the arms and drags her up towards the ramp, his back groaning, his hips threatening to simply lock up. Part of the problem is her pack. He gets it off. It has to weigh at least 20 pounds. He hands it up to Emily, who manages to take it and hold it in her lap. Open it, he says. Get her phone if it's in there. You have to. He doesn't finish, needing to save his breath for the job at hand. Besides, Em knows the drill. Right now they have to get out of here, and with any luck, they will. If anyone deserves some luck after what we've been through, it's us, he thinks. The idea that Bonnie has had even worse luck this evening never crosses his mind. There are a lot of adjectives I could use to describe the Harrises, but most prominent currently is their selfishness. I'm in pain, so Bonnie should suffer. Our luck has been bad, so Bonnie should suffer. It's absolutely ridiculous. M is already taking the SIM card out of Bonnie's phone, effectively killing it. He drags Bonnie up the ramp. Emily reverses the wheelchair to give him room. She's already unzipped the backpack and started rummaging inside. He'd like to pause and catch his breath, but they've been here too long already. Far too long. He kicks Bonnie's legs away from the door. It would have hurt her if she was conscious, but she's not. The note. It's waiting in the back pocket of the passenger seat in a clear plastic envelope. Emily has printed it, working from various notes Bonnie has made during her brief term of employment. It's not an exact replica, but printing doesn't need to be. And it's short. I've had enough. The note probably won't matter if the bike is stolen, but even then, it might if the thief is caught. Roddy puts it on the seat of her bike and wipes the sleeve of his sport coat across it, in case paper takes fingerprints. On the internet, that seems divided. He gets into the driver's seat, whooping for breath. He pushes the button that retracts the ramp and closes the door. His heart is beating at an insane rate. If he has a heart attack, will Emily be able to drive the van back to 93 Ridge Road and get it in its garage bay? Even if she can, what about the unconscious girl? Em will have to kill her, he thinks. And even in his current state, body aching all over, heart speeding, head pounding, the thought of all that meat going to waste gives him a pang of regret. 8:18 p.m. End of chapter 29. Yikes. The most alarming thing to me in this chapter was the amount of in-depth, very detailed, very thorough planning that they did to capture all these people. They learned more and more with each victim, and now here with Bonnie, they're pros. it is impressive that all of this happened in the span of 10 minutes, including her going to the Jet Mart. It's not 10 minutes of wrestling with these older folks. But given their age discrepancy, 10 minutes is pretty damn good. That's wicked fast for these old, very ill people to be able to overtake this, you know, mid-20s young girl. I cannot wait to see where we go from here. Thank you so much for joining me this week. I hope you come back next week. Just remember, if not, it's totally okay. It's all a bunch of hocus pocus. Don't forget to like and subscribe.